नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। This is the Fusion Yoga Studio, is it not, that we're sitting in? Yeah. Yoga Studio. This term yoga has completely entered the English language. When Srila Prabhupada was preaching Krishna consciousness in America, starting from 1965, yoga at that time was just beginning to become popular. Nowadays it's a household word, and there are estimated over 20 million Americans practicing yoga. But it's not really yoga. As Srila Prabhupada made the point in several lectures, in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there is a description of the meditative yoga system. Srila Prabhupada gave lectures on that, and those lectures were later transcribed and made into a book called The Perfection of Yoga. Because the last verse of that chapter describes what is the perfection of yoga, or who is the perfectional or best yogi. Who knows that verse? Anyone? Anyone learn that verse? Yogi nam api sarvesham mad. You know the verse, but you don't know where it comes. Madgate na antaratmana shadhavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamomataha. Of all, Krishna says, of all the, among all types of yogis, one who worships me with great faith, who has placed their goal of life, they've made me their goal of life. Such a person, Krishna says, is the best yogi. Now, I'll just divert from the topic to tell a little anecdote. In 1976, in Vrindavan, I was sitting in a yagya with many devotees in Krishna Balaram temple. Srila Prabhupada was presiding over it all, and the swaha, this, that was going on. All of a sudden, Srila Prabhupada said, stop. He leaned into the microphone, stop, the yagya in the middle. He pointed, you know what's coming next? No. Yeah. He pointed to, he had noticed that in the completely full courtyard, there was a child, baby, on the lap of his mother with his hand in his mouth. Srila Prabhupada said to the mother, this child has his hand in his mouth, he is contaminating the whole sacrifice. Take him out, wash his hand, and teach him not to put his hand in his mouth. So please take this child, wash his hand, and teach him not to put his hand in his mouth. And if you don't like me saying that, well, I learned it from Srila Prabhupada, so pick an argument with him, if you like. So, Srila Prabhupada, many of the people coming to him were interested in yoga. And not specific, not in the traditional way. In the traditional method of accepting yoga, one accepts a guru and is trained in a certain system of yoga. But Srila Prabhupada found that most of the people coming to him were what we might call into fusion yoga. They were eclectics. They'd pick up a little bit from here and there. Just like Buddha, we see here, there's a picture of Buddha. Stuck behind here are different bronze murtis of Buddha, which you can't see. I can see from here. But actually, Buddha's got nothing to do with yoga. He was a rebel against yoga. He went outside the Vedic culture. But people like to put together elements of what they like and what they think is spiritual. But even in Buddhism, there must be strictness, discipline, gurus. The word guru is there also, but people take guru as they like to use the word like teacher or advisor or guide. But Srila Prabhupada used the word guru. He translated this as spiritual master. So what is going on in the name of yoga in America today? It's developed a lot from the 1960s to what many people are doing. And many people have some idea that it's somewhat spiritual, but within their own definition of spiritual, then do-it-yourself spirituality. Yoga is generally thought of as an exercise system that might, if you're inclined to it, have some spiritual overtones. But actually, the whole Bhagavad Gita is about yoga. Do you know that? It's all about yoga. Every chapter is suffixed with a statement that this is a yoga shastra, just like the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita we have. Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Supanishatsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Shri Krishna Arjuna Sangvade Arjuna Vishada Yoga Nama Pratamodhyaya. So that's all the chapters end with a similar ending. Iti, thus, this is Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishad, Upanishadsu Brahma Vidyayam, spiritual knowledge, Yoga Shastra. It's a shastra, it's a delineation of yoga. Sri Krishna Arjuna Sangvade, in the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, and then the topic, which in the first chapter is the lamentation of Arjuna, and then Arjuna Vishada Yoga Nama, this is the name of it, and Pratamadhyaya, first chapter. So every chapter of Bhagavad Gita is given a name of the yoga, which is the principal subject of that chapter. So it's essential to understand what is yoga. Krishna consciousness is yoga. It's a process. It is the ultimate yoga. Yoga means, it means yukta. Yoga yukta munir brahma. What is that? Yoga yukta munir brahma achirin nachirin adigachati. Krishna says that yoga means the process by which a muni, these terms are all not very translatable into English, Srila Prabhupada often translates that as a thoughtful person, is yukt, is joined with Brahma, the spiritual. Therefore, there are various levels or types of yogis and various types of yoga according to the conception of what is Brahma, of what is the ultimate spiritual tattva, the ultimate spiritual dimension or reality. In Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a continuation of Bhagavad Gita, where Bhagavad Gita finishes, where it leaves off, the topic is taken up further in Srimad Bhagavatam. The topic of Srimad Bhagavatam is Brahma. Brahma means the ultimate spiritual reality. Both Bhagavad Gita and the Vedanta Sutras, they deal with the same topic. They are both summaries of Vedic knowledge. Vedic knowledge, it's almost redundant to say Vedic knowledge because Veda means knowledge. But we say like that to differentiate it between other systems of knowledge. But actually there is no knowledge outside of Veda. Veda means knowledge. But we say like that because we may talk about scientific knowledge or historical knowledge or psychological knowledge, but actually Veda means knowledge. And when we say Veda, we specifically refer to the body of knowledge that is revealed to human society, to actual human society, actual human civilization. Actual human civilization begins with the endeavor to understand spiritual reality. Atato Brahma Jignasa. Vedanta Sutras begin with, therefore we should inquire into Brahma, the ultimate spiritual reality. So human life begins with that. Otherwise, real human life begins with that. Otherwise, human life is indistinguishable from that of the animals. In the well-known statement of Hitopadesh, Ahara nidra bhayamaitunam cha samanyame tat pashubhya naranam. Both humans and animals eat, sleep, copulate, and fear, and therefore defend. So what's the difference between a human and an animal? Dharmo hitesham adhiko vishesham. The special facility in human life, which distinguishes that from animal life, is the opportunity to pursue dharma. And therefore, dharmena hina pashubhya naranam. A human being without dharma is just an animal. It's simple arithmetic. A plus B equals C, therefore C minus B equals A. So animal plus dharma equals human. Human minus dharma equals animal. So these terms we'll find in Bhagavad Gita. In fact, we'll find in Bhagavad Gita many terms repeated. There are many concepts which are discussed in Bhagavad Gita. Dharma, yoga, Brahma, these words we'll find again and again and again in Bhagavad Gita. It's very important to understand them properly, because if we don't understand them properly, then we may use the term, but we misuse it. There are many such misused terms or misunderstood terms, just like the word God in the English language. It's a very common term, but although there's much discussion nowadays in America as to whether or not there is God, or if there is God, what's he like? Which God is it? Do you get saved from the burning hellfire by being a Christian or by being a Muslim? Or maybe they're both good, or maybe neither are good. In all this discussion between atheists and theists and theists and theists, there's very little discussion about really the subject of the discussion, which is God. What is the nature of God? It's just presumed that everyone knows what they're talking about, although this is the most subtle subject to understand what is the nature of God. So there are many misused words. Yoga is one of them. Dharma, that word is entering the English language also, probably more from Buddhism than from Hinduism. Although the Buddha used the term Dhamma as a mispronunciation of the Sanskrit word Dharma, and he gave a new meaning to it, which is not given in the Vedas. So Veda means knowledge, and it's not vague. Real knowledge is not vague. It's clear. That's the very meaning of knowledge, isn't it? That which jnana is that which is the opposite to ajnana. Unclear means ajnana. This verse, dharmena hina pashubhya naranam, another rendition of that is jnanena hina pashubhya naranam. Without knowledge, A human is simply an animal. So gyan in the Vedic concept doesn't mean how to make computer chips. That is one level. In the Upanishads, there's the statement that there are two levels of knowledge given in the Vedas, paravidya, aparavidya. One is spiritual knowledge and one is concerned with this world. So knowledge of, specifically it's stated that within the Vedic knowledge there is knowledge of medicine, grammar, Jyotish, which means both astronomy and astrology, although nowadays it's usually used to mean just astrology, but actually the base of that is astronomy. Knowledge of how to pronounce mantras, these Vedangas, as they're called. That all, and even the Vedas, the Rig, Sama, Yajur, Atharva, that all falls within aparavidya, or knowledge of this world. But the highest knowledge that is given in Vedanta and Bhagavad Gita. From a different angle, both the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedanta Sutras, they summarize and give the purport of the Vedic knowledge. The Srimad Bhagavatam is an exposition of the Vedanta Sutras, an explanation, giving an explanation of the Vedanta Sutras. The Vedanta Sutras begin by stating that this is an exposition on Brahma, the ultimate reality. So what is the nature of that Brahma? That is described in Srimad Bhagavatam near the beginning. Vadanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yaj gyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabhyate. The ultimate spiritual reality is one, but it is perceived in three ways, three principal ways. That is called Brahma. Brahma means simply that which is great. So that is generally perceived of as in an impersonal manner. And Paramatma means the supreme person who is all-pervading. He is present in every atom, and with every jiva in this world. And Bhagavan. Bhagavan means the supreme personality of Godhead, the ultimate truth. So yoga is, there are different paths of yoga or different approaches in yoga. According to the conception of the yogi may perceive Brahma as being impersonal, all-pervading light. So mostly this yoga as it's understood, if anyone's interested in not simply exercising their body but in spiritual yoga, they mostly gravitate toward this impersonal conception. But beyond that, as Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, the best and highest yoga is the yoga of devotion to Krishna, bhakti yoga. This yoga as we know it in the modern age, there's exercise, and then some people, they come up to exercise, including breathing exercises, sitting postures, and some come up to what they supposed to be meditation. But the kind of, as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, and you'll find in that book, the Perfection of Yoga, and another book is there also, on a series of lectures on yoga, that's called The Perfection of Yoga. And I believe those two books are now merged, or they're printed together as one volume. at least in India. Is it like that? You don't print many books in America, different varieties. In America, the two are printed as, in India, they're printed two as one book. So Srila Prabhupada pointed out that the kind of meditation that people do think in the modern age, it's simply farcical. Because they do meditation and often with the idea of relaxation. This was promoted, it was big in America. It was something new in America and was promoted very much. When Srila Prabhupada was there, there was a yogi, or self-proclaimed yogi, Yogi Maharshi, what was his name? Maharshi, something like that. Mahesh Yogi, Maharshi, Mahesh, something like that. Maharishi, they pronounced it, is it? So, he promoted that, he didn't specifically promote yoga, he promoted what he called transcendental meditation. And as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, simply cheating, taking money from people, $35 at the time. And now it's, I was told, it's $2,000. Of course, the value of money has changed. But the value of his meditation hasn't changed. It's still zero. So, it's just cheating. Srila Prabhupada, he didn't promote it. He said it's not a religion, it's a relaxation technique. He said that. And although people took it to be something spiritual, and he certainly was a stereotypical yogi that you might expect. A long beard, a smile, and holding a flower. Perfect. Got the act down. And always talking in a very mild voice. Just a perfect yogi that everyone can relate to if they want to be cheated by such a person. And there are modern versions. Also, in that he's dead, and there are now more. I mean, it's been going on for generations in India, and now it's going on in the West also. So, Srila Prabhupada pointed out, what is this yoga? You do it for 20 minutes, you sit in the morning, and you do some so-called meditation, and then you go out into your life and do all your things, and there's no teaching that you have to become free from sense gratification. But as Srila Prabhupada would often say, yoga indriya samyamya. Yoga means to subdue the senses. But there's not even any discussion of such a thing. And rather, people nowadays take yoga to mean a technique or a series of techniques by which one can enhance one's body and consciousness so that one can better get on with the business of sense gratification. Often, or mostly people who do yoga, they're not gross meat eaters, but their goal of life is certainly sense gratification. And no one will tell them that they have to control their sexual appetite, because that's when getting the body fit, that's the main thing to get the body fit for. Although real yogis, they have to practice yogi, when I'm talking about the meditational yogis, for them the sex life is zero. But who will tell this to our American yogis? Buddha also, he was a renunciant. He didn't promote that you meditate and then you have sex. He didn't promote such a thing, such a nonsense thing. So the whole concept of yoga has been hijacked and dovetailed into people's pseudo-spiritual sense gratification. But yoga has absolutely nothing to do with this. In Bhagavad Gita also, although it's a yoga shastra, we don't find any discussion of different exercises and this and that. In the sixth chapter, there is discussion of pranayama, asana, and dhyana, meditation. Not only in the sixth chapter is dhyana mentioned. But yoga is a series of processes which are meant for raising the consciousness, which doesn't mean just becoming a vegetarian, but raising the consciousness means yoga yukta munir brahma, that one should link the consciousness with the spiritual. At the moment, our consciousness, we are in the, it's linked with the body and with this world. We think that I am this body. Dehatma buddhi, which is the same as an animal thinks. He thinks that the body is himself. But the body is temporary. We are eternal. Before this body was born, I was in another body. After this body inevitably ceases to function as a coherent unit, then I shall either enter another body or I shall attain to my original spiritual form in the spiritual world. But this body will not continue as a coherent unit for very long. And in fact, the body itself is far from being eternal, it's always changing at every moment. At every moment, our bodies are changing. With every breath we breathe in and with every breath we breathe out, and even if we hold our breath, there you got yoga, the pranayama, breathing in, breathing out, and holding it. But the body is changing all the time. At the molecular level, at least. So yoga begins with this knowledge. The beginning of yoga, I mentioned yoga, dharma, these are very much interrelated concepts. One cannot practice yoga without following dharma. Dharma is the substratum of all processes of yoga. Dharma is again a non-translatable word, and it takes on different meanings in different contexts. In yoga, the first two stages in the Ashtanga yoga system, which the very poor copy of which is marketed in fusion yoga and such things. Yama and yama means that which should be done, rules which should be followed, positive injunctions and negative injunctions to regulate our life in what we could call a pious manner. So all followers of dharma, whether they're karma yogis, jnana yogis, dhyana yogis, bhakti yogis, they must all follow basic principles of dharma. And although within their different systems, and even within their different sampradayas, according to their different gurus, there may be some differences, there are common features for all followers of dharma, many common features. For instance, rising early in the morning, bathing regularly, eating certain foods and not eating other kinds of foods, and eating on a regulated basis, worshipping God, or at least gods, and offering one's food before doing so. And there are many rules of for instance, I noted rules and conventions. I noted when I arrived here that the men and women were sitting on different sides of the room, which I pointed out this morning in the Bay Area Mountain View that wasn't being done, and that's not according to dharma. So when you commented on this, that's the Vedic way. And I counter-commented that it's not just the Vedic way. In any civilization, that is standard. It's when I was going to church at the age of, from since I can remember, 5 years old, the men were on one side and the women on the other side. There's a reason for that. It's basic dharmic principles, and many of which we find in all dharmic or religious, for want of a better term, traditions, with the understanding that unlimited or unrestricted mixing between the sexes is a cause of adharma or fall down. But we'll find in modern yoga studios they'll have men and women together doing yoga, the women in their leotards and their bodily features quite visible and prominent. And in the modern age, people think that if men and women mix together, that's very advanced, but actually it's very degraded, because that causes the opposite effect to the first effect that is desired in yoga. Yoga indriya sanyamya. The beginning of yoga is that the senses will be controlled. And when men and women come together, the senses will be uncontrolled. So here you can see how dharma is the substratum of yoga. Unless certain basic principles are followed, then there's no question of yoga. And yoga is not only about controlling the senses, not at all. It's a requisite for even beginning to practice yoga. So it's a sick joke, practically, that there's all this so-called yoga going on, in which there's no talk of sense control, no concept of it, and those who consider themselves yogis would not be interested in it at all. And even the so-called yoga, you have to get a certificate nowadays, I believe, to teach yoga. You have to be a certified yoga teacher. But even the teachers themselves have no idea that yoga is meant for sense control. So all their talk of spiritual life, it's just cheating and nonsense, because spiritual life cannot even begin to develop unless there is the substratum of sadharan dharma, which means the basic rules of human civilization. There's no question of going to a higher platform if one is on the animal platform. Animal platform means dharmena hina ahara nidra bhayam. If one is just eating, sleeping, mating and defending and doesn't follow any rules that are meant for at least preliminary control of the senses and regulation of one's life, then one is living like an animal. They may say, well, we have big freeways and we have advanced technology such as drones, whereby we can sit in one country and kill people in another without even having to go there. We have advanced technology, so how can you say we're animals? But it's the same propensity. One animal kills another. Actually, animals, they generally don't kill other animals unless they need food. Sometimes they may kill just for fun. Also, I've seen that once in Gujarat. I was staying in a farmhouse for writing. I was walking in the morning, chanting japa, and from one side of the I saw in a field a rabbit running with dogs running behind it, chasing it. On the way back, I saw the dead rabbit. The dogs had killed it, presumably, and just left it. So that was fun for them. But generally, animals don't kill others without a purpose. If they need to eat it, they'll do that. Or if there may be some territorial dispute or dispute over a cow, two bulls or two elephants, they may fight over a female. Even then, they don't generally kill each other. Anyway, I'm digressing. So, there's no question of yoga without dharma. Sadharan dharma. Dharma is a very big term. But in this sense, that's called sadharan dharma. The word sadharan means normal. In this sense, it means normative, that which should be done. General, these are meanings. So general dharma that everyone has to follow. Krishna gives some idea of that in Bhagavad Gita. Yukta hara viharascha yukta cheshtasya karmasu yukta swapnava bodhasya yoga bhavati dukaha. That anyone following any system of yoga, they have to be regulated in their eating. That means not eating too much, not eating too little, eating at regulated times, not just, oh, you're walking past an ice cream store. Oh, okay, looks good. Okay, let's walk in and eat it. All the time. In modern life, people, they're all, if they can't go more than half an hour without either smoking a cigarette, drinking a coffee, chewing some chewing gum, or taking some snacks, or in India, there's gutkha and all this kind of things. Pan and so all the time they need something for the tongue. There's no requirement for the body, but for the tongue. So such a person can never become a yogi. One has to be regulated in one's eating, in one's sleeping. One should sleep at night, not that one is up all night. And these are just common sense factors. One cannot practice yoga if one eats too much, sleeps too much. One has to be regulated, moderate life, and moderate in one's material activities. The Buddha promoted this, the middle path, but that's not the ultimate. That's just the background. He promoted as he and his followers promoted that as the ultimate is to be in the middle, or not to be extreme in anything. But that's just the basis. That's not in itself yoga. That's just the very basis of it. So there are many, many, many distortions, and people may say, well, how can you say distortion? We're doing yoga. Everyone knows what yoga means. Now, they may say that, well, you can say this yoga, but yoga has come to mean this. In linguistic theory, there are theories that a language, there are two schools of linguistic theory in this particular regard, which I'm going to say now. One says that, well, there are rules of the language, and if you don't follow them, then you're not speaking the language properly. And others say that, well, no, language is what people understand by it. So, if the rules of, by the rule of English grammar, you should say, they want, and not they wants. Then, if anyone says they wants, then it's incorrect English. But according to another school of linguistic theory, well, if a whole bunch of people say they wants, then that's the language, because that's what they say. The language is what they speak. But Sanskrit is a different kind of language. So you may say that, well, yoga, you can say if you like, yoga means this and yoga means that, but people are practicing yoga, so what they understand to be yoga is yoga. But Sanskrit isn't a language like that. It's not evolved, this idea that there was a big bang, and then there was a big soup, and then there was a big fermentation, and then a few molecules formed and they came together, and then there was some aquatic life, then they jumped on the shore, which was just forming at that time, and then some of them stood up, and then here we are today. And human culture has developed, and different languages have developed, but our understanding is completely different. And actually, it's not our understanding. We accept it as fact. That Sanskrit, otherwise known as Devanagari, it's the language which is spoken in the cities of the demigods. It's an eternal language. And words have... Actually, Sanskrit is completely different from any other language in as much as words don't have definite, they don't have meanings in the same way that words in other languages have. Just like, for instance, in English you have the word tree, right? And you say tree, and that sound represents, when I say tree, then everyone knows what I mean by a tree. It covers a whole group of plants. But in Sanskrit, there are several words for tree, and they all describe various characteristics. It's descriptive. The word tree doesn't, it's a sound. It could be any other sound. But for instance, the word padapa or angripa means which drinks through its leg. That's a description of a tree. So every word has a meaning which is specifically connected with that entity which it describes. It's not just arbitrary. So you can't just change the meaning of the word yoga to mean whatever you what you can do that in English. If you take it into English, you can say in English yoga means what they do at the Fusion Yoga Studio. But the original word comes from the yuj dhatu, that by joining. So yoga means to link. And it's not only used in spiritual contexts, it's used, for instance, in arithmetic. 2 plus 2. That's called yoga. Addition. And it can be used in many, just joining, you could say joining the mother with the child. It can be used in that sense. In that, the more common term would be yukti for that, joining together. The word, it's a synonym of yoga. But yoga has a specific meaning, which it's meant for, as that we find that, well, there are various definitions, yoga, indriya, samyamya, that, but that, when we say that yoga means to subdue the senses, that's not exactly a definition of the whole purpose of yoga, but it describes the first stage of yoga. In the Yoga Sutras, at the beginning, chitta nirodha. It's described as Patanjali's Yoga Sutras describe that yoga means to stop the consciousness. That's the literal meaning of it. So that's Patanjali's outlook. Of course, we find from Bhagavad Gita, Yoga Shastra, which is more authoritative than Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, that consciousness cannot be stopped at all, because consciousness is the eternal symptom of the soul. Nahi kaschit kshanamapi jatu tishtatya karma krit. One cannot stop work at any time. One cannot stop the mind. Arjuna, when he was given instructions on the meditational yoga by Krishna, he said it's very difficult to control the mind. Krishna said it is possible by practice and by detachment. But yoga is better understood as, yes, this point, yoga yukta munir brahma. It means that the muni, the thoughtful person, he is linked with the Supreme. So that is the purpose of all the yoga systems, the main ones of which are described in Bhagavad Gita. All yoga systems can be grouped. There are various systems. I saw a list within Shastra. There are over 50 systems of yoga that have been described, but they can be all grouped under three main categories: karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga. All of them are meant, all of them entail control of the senses. That is required in all of them. And all of them are ultimately meant for coming to the platform of linking with the Supreme. And then what is the nature of the Supreme? It would be good to understand that in the beginning, wouldn't it? Because then you could find out the best process for doing so. We understand from Bhagavad Gita and from the Vedanta Sutras that the Supreme is Krishna. So the highest yoga, or the best, or the most complete, let's say, the most complete process of yoga is that which best links us with Krishna. That is bhakti. That is directly meant for that. Whereas karma yoga and jnana yoga, they are allowances for persons' misconceptions. They allow people to make advancement toward the Supreme while maintaining misconceptions, which are supposed to become gradually purified. Whereas bhakti yoga is the best yoga because from the very beginning, it's based on proper knowledge. Therefore, Krishna, when he speaks about different kinds of people that come to him, he speaks that the artho, jignyasu, artharthi, jnani, four kinds of people approach Krishna. They're not all bhakti yogis. Some people approach Krishna because they're distressed. Krishna, save me from trouble. Some people, another kind of distress is to be in need of money. Krishna, give me money. Someone is curious, they're interested. And someone is jnani, that means he already knows that Krishna is supreme, and on that basis he wants to surrender to Krishna. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavan mang prapadyate. So Krishna says that the best of those who approach me is the jnani, one who knows, one who accepts who I am and who they are and what is the relationship between us. The relationship is that of Krishna is the master and the yogi is the servant. So bhakti yoga means to link with Krishna in the relationship, the natural, blissful relationship of service to Krishna. But those who are karma yogis and jnana yogis, they don't want to accept this, or they don't want to accept it fully. And therefore their yoga is not complete. And we're talking about serious practitioners of karma yoga and jnana yoga. What to speak of people who come in and they do some fusion yoga, which is just some complete concoction, mixing someone's concocted ideas about Buddhism with the concocted ideas about yoga and a few other, whatever other concocted ideas they find here and there or dream up. It's really farcical misrepresentation of yoga. I was just a little over a week ago, I spent some time in Rishikesh, which is being advertised nowadays as the world yoga capital, and they have the International Yoga Conference there each year. And I was staying at, not at, but at a place arranged by the those who organize there, the Gita Bhavan, which is organized from Gita Press, Gorakhpur. Those of you from North India especially will know this very well. Maybe some of you are from South India also. I didn't directly stay in the Gita Bhavan because they have a rule there that no foreigners, because most of the foreigners who go there are going for yoga, which in their own, most of the people going there for yoga, for them yoga means some exercise, some meditation, and then you join the Rishikesh sadhus. There are many of them sitting outside they smoke ganja. And the Westerners coming there, many of them, it's just their habit, just like animals, to have sex here, there, and everywhere. So they don't allow foreigners there. And although they're very happy with me in the sense that they invited me to speak at one of their assemblies, but they kept the rule and they arranged for me to stay somewhere else. Anyway, they're promoting yoga there. That this exercise kind of yoga with some spiritual overtones. But the people at the Gita Bhavan, who are associated with the Gita Bhavan, Gita Press, they're not, even though they're right next to the big, well, there are several yoga ashram. Rishikesh is mostly just one ashram after another and guest houses for yatris and for pilgrims. But they're unhappy with this. They say they're promoting yoga. This is not yoga. Yoga is described in Bhagavad Gita. Gita Press is famous for two books. They have many books, but for Bhagavad Gita and Ramcharitmanas. So this is not yoga. Yoga is what is described in Bhagavad Gita. And Yogeshwara is Krishna. That's very clear from Bhagavad Gita. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Parato, Dhanadharaha, Tatra Shriya Vijaya Obhutya. What is the last line? Tatra Shriya Vijaya Obhutya, Dhruva. Dhruva Nitir Matir Mama. Krishna is Yogeshwara. Wherever there is Yogeshwara, and Arjuna holding his bow, not the Arjuna who was Arjuna Vishada, not the lamenting yoga. Na yotsya iti govinda. I'm not going to fight. He threw down his Gandiva had fallen down. So when Arjuna is linked in yoga with Krishna by following Krishna's order, in Arjuna's case, to pick up his bow and use it, that he was doing yoga, linking the arrows with the enemy's bodies. That was his practice of yoga. So when Krishna is there with his pure devotee who's fully surrendered to Krishna in yoga, then there must Krishna, who is the Yogeshwara, the master of yoga, then there must be all opulence, morality, tatra shri, and victory. So this should be understood. This, what is actual yoga? The whole concept of it has been hijacked. It's some kind of cheating to present this as yoga. You may say, well, people are becoming vegetarians. Okay, well, it's generally it's better to be a vegetarian than to be a meat eater. Generally, not in all respects, because they're not for Kali Yuga, but in other ages there are Vedic sacrifices in which animals are killed and the meat is distributed as yagya shishta. So it's better to take that than to take a vegetarian diet of food which is not offered in yagya. But in Kali Yuga it's not applicable. So we may say, well, it's better. And anyway, in Kali Yuga no one's going to perform any sacrifice. And those who do, it's another farce. These so-called yagyas which go on. So we may say, well, it's somewhat better. Okay, it's marginally better, we can say. But the monkey's also vegetarian. The monkey also has so many girlfriends. So someone becomes a yogi and they get a body as healthy as a monkey so they can jump around from one girlfriend to another, then what actually is the benefit? Unless there is dharma in one's life, then it's simply sinful life. There's dharma and adharma. the discussion of dharma has to come before the discussion of yoga. Yeah, Bhagavad Gita gives the summary of all Vedic knowledge in from the angle of yoga. Vedanta Sutras do so from the platform of rising beyond dharma. That's a technical subject. So I'm sure you all understand all these points, or you have some, at least some inkling of this. Otherwise, you would be in this yoga studio on another day, not today. You would be in another session. So you understand this. But it's good to understand in more detail, to understand clearly all these points. It might sound controversial that I say all this yoga is cheating. I didn't know. I learned, I had some feeling like that, but I understood from Srila Prabhupada, who very kindly taught me and many others that. Yoga is not a question of fusion, just bringing together everything, all the nonsense in our heads and putting it all together in the recipe that we ourselves like. Yoga means to understand what is reality, who we are, what is our duty in relation to the Supreme, who is Krishna, and to act in relationship to Krishna, in service to Krishna, and then become linked with Krishna through love. Love is another word. Although it's such an important word, it's the essence of everything, I'm reluctant to use it because it's such a misused word, such a badly misused word. It is the ultimate, Krishna Prem. But unless we understand that Krishna Prem is solidly on the basis of service to Krishna, selfless service to Krishna, not just selfless service. We may talk about selfless service as being love, but selfless service is for Krishna, specifically for Krishna. If we leave Krishna out of the equation, it's another form of cheating. If we talk about selfless service, but we don't make it clear that selfless service must be in the service of Krishna, then we are promoting another bogus thing. Just like people think, for instance, that welfare workers who feed the poor and open hospitals, they're selfless. But they cannot be selfless unless they are serving intentionally, directly serving Krishna. If we have the idea that we're benefiting people by amputating their limbs, for instance, or filling their bellies, without linking them with Krishna, then we ourselves are in illusion. And how can we help others if we're in illusion? How can we? Yoga is on the platform of knowledge. So all these things have to be understood very clearly. Otherwise, we can't properly practice yoga, any system of yoga, unless we're very clearly guided, and particularly in bhakti yoga, and we have to clearly understand that we are not the body, we are eternal spirit soul, we are eternal servants of Krishna, we are meant for serving Krishna. Our present position of a yoga, of being delinked from Krishna, is not our natural position. So we have to relink with Krishna. And that is the solution to all our problems. Anartho pashamang sakshad bhakti yoga madhokshaje lokasya janato vidvans chakre sadvata sanghitam. In Srimad Bhagavatam it's stated that all the anarthas, all the unwanted things, all our problems can be resolved by the direct process of bhakti yoga. That is not done by karma yoga or jnana yoga or fusion yoga or whatever. Definitely not by fusion yoga. That in itself is an anartha. So all of the problems, we may solve some problem. We may have a bad back problem and we solve it by doing some exercises. But we're going to have millions of bad backs, life after life, until we directly link with Krishna. And that solves all the problems. Solves the back problem, the neck problem, the eye problem, the constipation problem, the diarrhea problem, and the birth and death problem. And the wife problem, and the girlfriend problem, and the economic problem, and there's no end of the problems. They're all solved by the direct process of linking with Krishna. People don't know this, therefore, Vyasadeva, the author of all the, not the author, but the presenter of all the Vedas, which gives full knowledge of yoga and dharma and ultimately bhakti, he presented the Srimad Bhagavatam so that we can understand all these points clearly. Srimad Bhagavatam begins with Kaitava Dharma Projita Atra. Here in this Srimad Bhagavatam, cheating in the name of dharma is kicked out. Projita means completely rejected. And Vedyam Vastavam Atravastu. Herein is described the actual subject matter of the Vedas. So please study Srimad Bhagavatam. Understand all these points. Otherwise you're going to be cheated. People want to be cheated. They prefer it. If we tell people that you come here, chant Hare Krishna, become purified, surrender to Krishna, they won't like it. If we tell, well, some, you're liking it, I hope. But if we tell people that you come here and we'll give you a secret mantra for $2,000, maybe others have some special deals, and we'll teach you to meditate and levitate and you can become God in 6 months. Then people, oh, very nice. We'll teach you yoga by which you can get personality development, personality skills, how to have a centered personality, and how to deal with stress, how to get ahead in the world. Nothing to do with self-realization. Nothing to do with Krishna. People think, oh, very good, very nice. That yoga means that, again, that means yoga with the material world. We should call it samsara yoga. We're already completely linked into the material world, and this kind of so-called yoga just links you in more. We should be more intelligent than to be misled by all this cheating. Hare Krishna. Any question about this?
Question about serving Krishna. In Bhagavatam it says Mahat Sevam Dwara Mahur Vimuktis.
Mahat Seva Dwara Mahur Vimuktis. They say that by serving the great, it is the door to full liberation. Yeah.
So, I mean, you were saying only to Krishna.
Only to Krishna, yeah.
So, why
is it recommended? Is that there's no contradiction in that, because someone becomes great by serving Krishna. Serving the great, who's the great? Who is a great devotee of Krishna? So there's no contradiction there.
Also, they could be Mayavadi.
Yes, that's pointed out. Mahantas che te sama. What is that? Mahantas te sama chitta Prashanta. So the commentators point out that there can be Mayavadis also, can refer to them. So, yeah, that Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan. Mayavadis, not exactly Mayavadis, but they're Adhyatmikvadis. They're serious yogis. You can get, by serving and associating with actual yogis, and there is such a thing as liberation, impersonal liberation, that can be attained. It's not the highest liberation, but it is a state that can be attained to. And yeah, in any system of yoga, one has to be guided by guru under strict discipline. So that's there in the Mayavad Sampradaya also, or the Brahmavadi Sampradaya.
So the liberation Prabhupada is talking about, Bhagavatam is about impersonal liberation?
No, well, it's different. You have to see it contextually in different parts of Bhagavatam, as in Bhagavad Gita. The terms may be used in different contexts. What is that? Atmanam Atmano. What is that verse? Atmanam Atmano. The term Atma, for instance, is used in the Gita in different contexts to mean the mind or the self, or sometimes can mean the body also. So in some places in Bhagavatam, mukti can also refer to impersonal liberation. But the particular definition, or the best definition of mukti is given in Bhagavatam itself. That muktir hitvanyata rupam swarupena vyavastitihi. Mukti means to give up these superfluous forms and attain one's own form. One's own spiritual form, to be situated in one's own spiritual form. That comes in the definition of the 10 subjects of Bhagavatam, one of which is mukti. So all the terms are defined. So that term mukti is defined as giving up extraneous forms and being situated in one's own actual constitutional form. Regarding this, there's also that well-known verse of Yenye Rindaksha Vimuktamaninas Twayasta Bhavada Avishuddha Buddhaya Aruhya Kritshrena Parang Padang Tataf Patantyato Nadrita Yushmadangraya. Persons may become liberated by performing very difficult sadhana. They may attain to the spiritual position, and they are liberated, but they consider themselves to be fully liberated, but they're not. And they fall down again because they neglect to worship Krishna's lotus feet. So that's an important understanding of mukti from Srimad Bhagavatam. So you please all study Gita, Bhagavatam. Out with the TV, in with the Bhagavatam. Good formula. TV means birth and death. We're just setting ourselves up for, not only for birth and death, but for going to hell. Because we find in Gita, Trivitang narakasyedam dwaram nashanam atmanaha kamas krodha tatalo bas tasmat etang trayang tyajet. Krishna says there are three gates leading to hell, kam, krodha, lobh. Lust, anger, and greed. Therefore, they should be given up. But what does TV promote? Calm, sex, crowd, anger, violence, and lobe. Buy this, buy that, buy something else. The TV is it's not just we'll stay in the cycle of birth and death, but we'll go down. And even we don't have to wait, our consciousness becomes completely hellish. So out with the TV, in with the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the best formula. How many of you have sets of Bhagavatam? You all have sets of Bhagavatam in your home? Those that don't? You bought three Srimad Bhagavatam sets. Yeah, take. Those who've got Bhagavatam sets and don't have Chaitanya Charitamrita sets, you should get that also. You may say, well, I'm not ready to read it. Well, doesn't matter. Get it. Better have it in your house. Just to be it in your house is purifying. That's mentioned in Nectar of Devotion. Just to have these books in your home is so purifying that even the demigods will offer you respect. You don't have... Forget about worshipping the demigods. You study Srimad Bhagavatam, the demigods will worship you. So fill up your house with this literature. And it's just like why they have advertisements. They show again and again and again because they want you to become attracted to it. They show Coca-Cola again and again and again, so you become attracted. So if you have books in your house, eventually the desire is going to be there, well, maybe I should read it. Actually, we should be very eager to study this. Many parents in India are concerned about the cultural future of their children. Sorry, in America, Indian parents in America. I wish the Indian parents in India were so concerned. But in America, they can see all the results right in front of their eyes, whereas in India, they only see it through the TV screen and they think it's some kind of fantasy land. They don't see the effect directly in front of them immediately. Although that's coming in all respects. But this, if you read this with your children, you can give them this understanding of Krishna by which even if they do go astray at some point, they'll come back to the right point if they have this understanding. Another thing is that Srila Prabhupada's books are excellent English. Most of the Indians who come to America, they speak fluent but very bad English. Don't mind me saying so. I'm sure, I speak fluent Hindi, but I'm sure it's not exactly proper. Although people are not so unkind to tell me that it's not. But I'm sure there are many mistakes in it. But to have language skills is, and even for a materialistic person, it's a great asset, especially if you can speak your own language or the language of the people that you're living among. Not only can you communicate better, but people who are aware of that, for instance, one should say they went rather than they went. When you say they went, they'll think, well, he's not really up to the mark. Yeah, definitely that's there. If one speaks irregularly, it means you don't really know what you're saying or doing. So language skills are important. And English in a practical sense, you could say, is the most important language in the world today. So your children can learn excellent English because they're actually Srila Prabhupada was empowered by Krishna to present these very deep and subtle understandings of the Vedic knowledge in simple English. And that's language is ultimately, well, the first purpose of language is to communicate. And there may be other purposes also, just like to entertain, for instance, poetry, to entertain, maybe that's not the right word, but it can be intellectually pleasing and emotionally pleasing also, but the first and foremost function of language is to communicate. So if one can communicate complex topics in straightforward language, that is a great gift. And you can get that from Srila Prabhupada's writings because he has done so. And his editors have also done excellent work because Srila Prabhupada's grammatical knowledge and in some cases usage wasn't in English perfect. So these are excellent books for educating your children. You'll also have to get educated, because when they ask you so many questions from reading it, as children are wont to do, then you'll have to answer them. So you can also get a good spiritual education by doing so. So in all respects, please read Srimad Bhagavatam and get it for your children also. Yeah. Who doesn't have it? Then we won't ask them. We'll just... Who can refuse? Who doesn't have it? Now, I didn't see every hand going up when we asked who has it. That means there's... What's going on here? Okay, you can find them. Find them, zoom in on them, and... What's it called? Find, target, and destroy. Destroy their material attachments by giving them Srimad Bhagavatam. I was just talking about the editing. I saw this edition of Bhagavad Gita as it is here. I just want to read one verse with the translation and the purport. A verse, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 29. Anantas chasmi naganam varuno yadasamaham pitrinam aryama chasmi yama sangyamatamaham. A note there, the line, pitrinam aryama chasmi. Pitri means the forefathers, right? Okay, translation. Of the celestial Naga snakes, I, Krishna says, am Ananta. Of the aquatic deities, I am Varuna. Of departed ancestors, Pitris, I am Aryama. And among the dispensers of law, I am Yama, Lord of Death. Purport. Among the many celestial Naga serpents, Ananta is the greatest, as is Varuna among the aquatics. They both represent Krishna. There is also a planet of trees presided over by Aryama, who represents Krishna. There are many living entities who give punishment to the miscreants, and among them Yama is the chief. Yama is situated in a planet near this earthly planet, and after death those who are very sinful are taken there, and Yama arranges different kinds of punishments for them. There's a serious problem in this purport. Did anyone pick up on it? I'd said about the Pitris. Actually, Krishna says, Pitrinam Aryama Chasmi. In the purport, there is also a planet of trees presided over by Aryama. So clearly this should be Pitris. Srila Prabhupada dictated it. The transcriber had never heard of Pitris, because this was in the early days of the movement, and they heard it and they put trees. Sounds funny, doesn't it? It's not so funny when, more than 40 years later, it's still being published, which is a clear mistake, which Srila Prabhupada clearly didn't say that. Clearly this should be, there is a planet of the Pitris. But due to a transcriber's error, it came out as trees. Now, there are some devotees who say that we should publish the books exactly as they were published when Srila Prabhupada was here. And they say that to edit the books is a great sin and a great crime, and therefore this book is being published. But you can see that there's a serious problem, isn't there? Yeah. And Srila Prabhupada didn't say that. Quite clear that he didn't say that. And we may say, well, we should just leave it like that because it was there when Prabhupada was here. But, all right, what if someone is a little thoughtful, or if they're a scholar of Bhagavad Gita, and they say, what's this? There's a planet of the trees presided over by Aryama. Should be a planet of the Pitris. And we'll say, well, it's been there for 40 years. And I said, why? Why don't you just correct it and put what your guru actually said and what he wanted to communicate, not what someone who made a mistake put. So this is a prime example of a mistake not made by Srila Prabhupada, which should be corrected, which is why I, although if there are things which are not proper within our movement, I'm not afraid to say that it should be corrected. But the argument that this book, without certain correction, should be distributed, and then that to make those corrections is a sin against Srila Prabhupada. I don't follow that at all. I think it's round the other way. I think it's extremely irresponsible, after all these years, to distribute Bhagavad Gita with, in the name of Srila Prabhupada, saying there is a planet of the trees, which is just, there may be a planet of the trees, but it's not what's referred to here in Bhagavad Gita. And it's actually just nonsense. So I'm just saying that, as I see here, you have this edition. There may be some problems with the edited edition, but on principle, there should, some changes are needed. I thought I should point that out to all of you, as you have this edition. I'm not saying those who are promoting this edition are, that they are demons or sinful or any such thing, but I disagree with them that absolutely no changes should be made. There are many more changes, actually, with wrong verse references, verses left out of the original, the Sanskrit misquoted, and purports in the wrong place. The original editor, he had a long beard, because in those days, in the early days of the movement, Srila Prabhupada wasn't very strict about that devotees should shave. So in one section where Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport that for cleanliness one should shave regularly, the editor shaved that part out of the purport. So that remained like that forever? Because Hayagriva Prabhu was attached to his beard. So he didn't like what Prabhupada said. And he left it out. Should it remain left out forever? I think it's far from being a disservice, I think it's a service to Srila Prabhupada to restore the clause about shaving and shave off the beard, and not what Prabhupada said. Not don't shave what he said. Yeah, you want to say? You're going to say? This edition is blessed by Prabhupada. Well, that's true, but when Srila Prabhupada came across something in this edition, he said that it should be changed. In the verse, Krishi Gauraksha Vanijam, Vaishakama Svabhavajam, the Gauraksha was printed as cattle raising. And when that was read out to Srila Prabhupada, he said, this is a very bad editing mistake. It should be cow protection. It has a completely different connotation. Cow protection is a sacred part of Vedic culture. Cattle raising gives the connotation of beef farming. So Srila Prabhupada pointed out, this is a serious mistake. And it's, of course, you can't say anything with certainty, but it's in the same vein, we can conclude that if Srila Prabhupada it was brought to his attention that this, the planet of the trees has been put, when it clearly should have been the planet of the pitris, he would say to change it. It's clear that Srila Prabhupada didn't go through it word by word. Otherwise, the cattle raising would have never got in there in the first place.
How about the pictures that are missing? Why don't they put the original pictures?
Why don't they put the original pictures? That's another issue. It is another issue. I'm not saying that everything that is in the... I'm not saying that all the changes that have been made should be made. But I'm just pointing out that at least you don't get absurdities. The planet of the tree is presided over by Aryama, which does not represent what Srila Prabhupada said, doesn't represent what Krishna says, and it's got no connection with the truth, which is what Bhagavad Gita is supposed to... That's why we're distributing these books, to communicate that. It's a technical point, but it doesn't change the philosophy. The philosophy in this book is perfect. But Krishna also makes so many technical points, just like, for instance, Pitrinam Aryama Chasmi, among the Pitris I am Aryama. And like I say, anyone who's a scholar of Bhagavad Gita, they'll see this and they'll think that either the author is stupid or his disciples who've never understood this, because of that they're stupid, or if they do understand it and they still keep it, either way they're stupid. So it doesn't represent Srila Prabhupada, what he said in this regard. Other things are also may be questionable, but I'm just pointing this out here. And for that matter, those who are printing this, they also present it differently. For instance, they make a small format Bhagavad Gita, which Srila Prabhupada didn't. He never said to do that. He wanted it this size. So I don't think anyone's fully innocent of the charge of making unauthorized changes.
Maharaj, you said about the Bahunam Janmanamante, and the verse before that, Krishna is saying that the Jnanis are most dear to him.
Yeah, just before that, yeah. Udara, what is that? Udara sarvamevaita jnani tvatmaiva me matam. Well, different acharyas have analyzed that differently, saying that the jnani mentioned in the in that verse is not the same as in the other verse. But it can also be that such a jnani, he approaches Krishna, but he's also very rare to come to that understanding.
I've tried to read the Srimad Bhagavatam. I've started about 3 or 4 times, and it's very...
You find it tough going, huh?
Yeah.
Reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. Should you keep forcing yourself? You could try reading it with others. That's a suggestion. Many devotees tell me that they read it, but they can't remember anything. Their mind's like a sieve. But still, the endeavor to read it in itself is purifying. Krishna will be pleased with that. Srila Prabhupada also said that it's not that everyone's going to be very scholarly. So if you find it too tough to read Bhagavatam, well, you can serve in other ways. Maybe read other books which you find more easy to follow and get into. But especially those who are going to preach Krishna consciousness and those who are going to teach Krishna consciousness, those who are supposed to be spiritual leaders, brahmanas, they should have a good understanding of good depth in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, yeah, it's not everyone. May not be that everyone's has that propensity to study deeply. But we also shouldn't take that as an excuse not to. If we may say, well, it's not my propensity. My propensity is to chant Hare Krishna while watching TV or something like that. I've seen that. I've walked into devotees' homes without them knowing I'm coming and seen them chanting their rounds. Very good, but watching TV at the same time. So, yeah, those who are going to, especially those who are going to be brahmanas, Srila Prabhupada wanted to create a class of brahmanas. Nowadays, we think that, well, someone's initiated, and after 6 months or 1 year, then put a string on them. But that wasn't Srila Prabhupada's, exactly what he wanted. They should actually be spiritual leaders by practice and precept, by their Hare Krishna, by their pure activity, their pure behavior, and their instructions, which are based on fully derived from Shastra. Practice, that also includes vritti. They should not be employed. Brahmana cannot be employed. So, class of brahmanas means they're independent from the normal course of activities. They're not bound to anyone. They're not a paid servant. Therefore, they can maintain their independence in the sense of their integrity. They live by principles. Difference between Brahmana and Vaishnav? Yes. Vaishnav is a full Brahmana. Then. In a sense, a Vaishnava can be awarded Brahmanical initiation, because a Vaishnava is more than, even if he's working in a job, which is from the Varnashram standpoint, and standpoint of Srimad Bhagavatam, is called Shvavriti, or the profession of a dog. But the purpose for which Srila Prabhupada introduced this Brahminical initiation is not directly a Vaishnava purpose. You don't have to. A Vaishnava is more than a Brahmana, so he's not required to have a Brahminical initiation. A Brahminical initiation is to establish a Brahminical class who can lead Varnashram. But then that means that they have to act as a Brahmana. Otherwise, what's the meaning? There's no need. If you say there's no need, a Vaishnava is above a Brahmana, so you can give Brahmin initiation, but to a Vaishnava. But why should you give it to a Vaishnava if he's more than a Brahmana? If on that understanding, there's no need to give it to him. The only reason to give it to him is so that he can act as a Brahmana and be recognized as a Brahmana, as distinguished from non-Brahmanas. So if he doesn't act as a Brahmana, why give him that status? That it's a mundane designation, which is meant for helping to establish Varnashram, which is meant to help to establish Krishna consciousness in the world. But if we give Brahminical initiation because the so-called Vaishnavas are in the mundane consciousness of thinking, I want to be a Brahmana, then how is that going to help to establish Varnashram or Krishna consciousness? It just perpetuates a neophyte understanding of what it means to be a Vaishnava. If they think I'm more of a Vaishnava because now I'm a Brahmana, then they don't understand what it means to be a Brahmana, which means they're not a Brahmana. It's just a show, that's all. Just for show, just show. Yeah, I'm a Brahmana. I'm more than you. That's mundane. True Vaishnava accepts the status of a Brahmana as part of his service. If he's not in a position to execute the duty of a Brahmana, then why should he take that designation? It's not helpful to him or to anyone else. Hare Krishna. Shall we finish there and move on to the favorite part of the program for everyone? Well, I was going to say prasad, but everyone likes that.